Good morning, everyone. I hope you're all having a good day so far. As mentioned, my name is Christine, and I'm also here with my colleague Alistair, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about fraud prevention, what questions to ask when you're working with your financial representative, and where to get additional information. We will speak for approximately 45 minutes, maybe. And then we'll leave some time for Q&As. Feel free to take notes, but I am going to say that it is not necessary because I believe I have John and Eric's email. And what I tend to do after these presentations is usually at the end of the day, I will send an email as a follow-up with links to all the information and resources shared so that you can then refer back to that if needed. So that being said, let's get started. I'm going to share my screen. Voila. So we're good to go. So we're here today to talk about Protect Your Money. For those of you that are not familiar with our organization, the Ontario Securities Commission is the provincial regulator for the capital markets. As a regulator, we set rules and policies and also enforce those policies. A key part of our mandate is to provide protection to investors. And one of the best ways to do that is to ensure that people have access to good information. So my role at the investor office, a branch within the OSC, is community outreach, where, you know, Alistair and I, we share information so that you have, you know, good information so that you can make more informed decisions. Within the investor office, there's outreach. We also have a research team. We also have an education team where we develop resources. So based on the feedback we get from you in the form of questions or comments, you know, we can develop resources. And we also have policy team, and also your questions and comments can inform what we do on the policy side. So one of the things we do is we're out and we talk to people a lot. And one of the things we know everyone is very concerned about, and that's fraud. So that said, I'm going to turn it over to Alistair to talk to you about what's happening in the world of fraud and what we do.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for inviting us to speak to you today. It's our pleasure to come here. So today, my portion of the presentation, we're going to be discussing fraud, some fraud prevention, talk a few stories, give some tips on how to deal with these situations. So one of our jobs, as Chris laid out, is to protect investors from manipulative behavior, fraud stuff, and investment fraud is devastating, not only in the financial sense, but also within relationships. Sometimes one partner won't tell the other partner that they've made an investment. They haven't talked about it, and then it goes south, and it can cause some strain in relationships. And we've seen this time and time again. It also harms people's physical and mental health. Prior to joining the police many, many years ago, I actually went to school for social work at Ryerson and worked in a group home and in some other situations. So the mental health side of it, the stress side of it, I see that quite often in investigations that we've done. And when somebody loses a lot of money, maybe all their money, it does have a physical and mental effect on that. And it's it can be absolutely devastating. Misconduct just doesn't hurt the individual investor. It also stresses people's trust on the markets, on the institutions that are within the market. And part of our job is to create confidence in those markets so that they operate properly and people feel free to use the system. In enforcement angle within the commission, we have a lot of tools at our disposal. Besides straight out enforcement, we have a bunch of programs to facilitate things being looked after and dealt with. We have a very successful whistleblower program. It's very unique within Canada, within the securities framework. It's been in the paper a fair bit this summer. We also have things like no contest settlements, investor warnings to invest to advise people that there's an entity that isn't registered to conduct business within the province of Ontario. We have a disruption program, which I've spent some time in. We have options for self-reporting, so encouraging people that might be across the line to report themselves and get the situation sorted out. We really like to identify misconduct early, stop it from continuing, and we also rely a lot on international cooperation. We have a lot of fellow regulators across the world that we have a relationship with. For a period of time, I was operationally in charge of that relationship, and it is a very important thing in what the OSC does. I mentioned that we have investor alerts. This is something that comes out all the time. And when we realize there's somebody operating within the province that isn't registered to conduct activities within our province, we can issue warnings. And hopefully, if you are contemplating investing in something, you do a Google search. And quite often, these will come up on the first page of the results. And there's a bunch of companies here that I've listed that have recently had investor warnings released on them. Two of them, I believe, I worked on. So we have Encore Trade Limited, Crypto, and the names are so long sometimes, but there's a bunch of them there, and they come out on a regular basis when we come across something. Quite often people ask us the question, can you get my money back? Quite often the answer is no, because the money's gone. Having dealt with fraudsters since the early 90s, many fraudsters just burn the money up. It comes in as it comes in, it goes out. And there's a certain psychology to a lot of big-time fraudsters. They know they're going to get caught. They know it's going to end, so they burn the cash. They just buy things, rent things, and sometimes people hide the money. One of the situations where we have recovered some money, and it does happen, is the case of Anisys Investments, and there's a couple gentlemen that are mentioned there. And a certain portion of the lost money was recovered, and there is a process going on right now to get people some of their money back. Now, it's not 100%. It's a certain number of cents on the dollar. But when we can do this, our act gives us some legislative power to be able to do things like this. So what is the story out there with investment fraud? 1 in 25 Canadians say they're the victim of an investment fraud, just not a fraud, but an investment type of fraud. Half of those people that are victims are over the age of 55. 1 in 5 Canadians say they've been approached about a potential fraudulent scheme. That's 20%. I'm not sure how many people are on the call here. I think there's 25. So if my math is right, and please forgive me if it isn't, at least 5 of you have probably been approached with a potential fraudulent scheme. And when I say that, I like to look at the people. If we're in person, I look at a crowd. In this, I look at the screen and I go, I don't really know you, but to me, it's not just a stat. It's now somebody that I see on the screen. The scary thing about these stats is only maybe 1 in 3 Canadians who have been approached actually tell anybody about it. So these are safe numbers, but they're not the real numbers. Since COVID-19 descended upon us and has caused so much havoc in our personal, professional lives, there's been a lot of scams out there going. They've been alerts. It's in all the news broadcasts. You see one from the Toronto Police there, Detective Gail Reagan. I used to work with her a long time ago. And there's a lot of stuff going on out there, and people need to be careful. And we're going to talk about some of the things we can do to help protect ourselves. So some of the scams we're seeing regarding COVID-19, warnings about your finances. Maybe you got an email, a text, or whatever. I'll be quite honest with you. I'm getting texts and emails from banks that I've never heard of telling me that my account with them is in jeopardy somehow. They're just sending out millions of messages, computer-generated messages, trying to get you to click on a link and then end up giving up some of your personal information. It's the same with government messages. There's a fair number. I don't know how many times I've been told I'm going to jail from CRA. It's been a lot. And as far as I'm concerned, actually, Chris and I were out a couple of years ago on an event. Chris and I have actually been on the road, I think, 6 or 7 years together. And we were doing a presentation. And while she was talking about something, I actually got the text from a CRA scan. And so these things happen even when you're giving a fraud prevention lecture. So it's a real thing. There's advanced fee schemes going on, work from home scams. And in the end, it ends up being an advanced fee scheme where, yes, you can participate, but you have to put some money up. And in the end, it's not a real thing. And that one of the newest things, I just finished another stint in enforcement up until the end of July, romance scam. Now, romance scams have been around for a long time. At one time, it wasn't virtual, it was letters and things like that. But a certain number of the cases that I was dealing with when I was back in enforcement for a while was romance scams. Now, during COVID-19, people need connection. Maybe they're lonely. And quite often people reach out virtually on the computer and strike up a relationship with somebody. And what we've seen in enforcement, and probably 20, 25% of the cases that I was working on had a romance scam angle to them. And what happened is as the relationship matured online, the topic came up of money. And we've had victims end up giving control of investment accounts, bank accounts to these people that they've never actually met, who could be from another country. Often they're given a photo which doesn't look like the real person, and people are getting cleaned out. And I had quite a number of cases. And when I was talking to the people that I reported to when I was back in enforcement, my experience with my caseload was not unique. So especially in a time of COVID-19, when people are lonely, they're not out as much, they don't have the benefit of a group like the one you have, where you know you can look forward to meeting up with some people, going into a group, into a little room to have a discussion about whatever topics. People get lonely and they're looking for that connection. And this is how a romance scam works. It's that connection. People provide it. They provide security. They think. And then next thing you know, they jump into having to trust this person that they've never actually met physically. So let's talk about a couple different types of frauds that are out there. The first one is the pump and dump, and it has been around forever. And I'm just going to, you know, this is what happens. Chris takes up some company. Maybe it comes off the shelf. Maybe she creates it. Maybe it doesn't even exist. And she starts pumping out all sorts of news, and uses all the social media feeds and says, listen, we have just received the mining rights to a huge area in Central America. And now we're raising funds, we're selling stocks, and people start jumping on this thing. And as the price rises, people are pouring money into it. And then at the end of the day, the people take the money out and it doesn't actually exist. It's a pump and dump, and what they're trying to do is get people interested in it, build some hype about it, and then at the end, they pull the plug and they just run away. The next one is an affinity fraud. So what's an affinity group? A church group, a citizens group, neighborhood group, cultural group, a group like yours. And these people, you know, these types of groups, they share common purpose and identity, and they're very, very important in our social fabric, which is stressed a little bit with COVID-19 because we can't meet as freely as we did before. So how does it work? So I come into your group, or maybe I rise up from within the group and I gain the trust of the group. I talk to the leadership. I talk about an opportunity. Perhaps I gift some of the leadership in the group this investment opportunity. And I make sure I get into the newsletters, I get on into email disbursements, and I have a picture with my armor. I'm trying to lean over here to give Eric a hug. I don't know if he's beside me on your screen. And I try to get a picture taken, and it looks like the leadership is endorsing this endeavor. And I gain that trust, and then I take the money and run. So not only do people lose their money, they may lose the trust they have in the leadership, in the group, friendships end, and these groups that are so important to our social fabric end up becoming not that. And so that's an affinity fraud. And really what the fraudsters are using is they're using that trust, that commonality, that belief in the group against the group, because once it gets going and they get enough traction, they use the dynamics of the group to do what they need to do. Now, a Ponzi scheme, everybody put up their hand that seems that has heard the term Ponzi. Okay, most of you. So this is what we do. I'm selling something, and so an investment opportunity. And so then I sell it to Eric, like I need $1,000, then Dennis, then John, then the other John, then Robert and Brian. And then Eric needs, he wants his interest payment. So I go to iPad 2 and I take some of his $1,000 and I pay it to Eric for his interest payments. Now I say I'm investing in something, but I'm not actually investing in something. And as I go along, I keep getting more and more money. And when I have to pay out people, if they're, you know, complaining about an interest payment, or maybe the odd person needs their money back because they need to go to Florida, whatever it is, I keep going. There is no underlying business going on, or very little. I investigated when I first got to the commission. All I did was investigate Ponzi schemes. And I found around the $25 or $30 million mark, it became very difficult for the fraudster to manage what's going on, because they don't want to share the responsibility with somebody else because they'd have to share the spoils. And it eventually falls down, because as the Ponzi gets bigger and more people are involved, then I have to bring more people in. And it just becomes very hard to work it. And eventually there's a blowout. I just shut it down. I take whatever money's left and I leave. That's a Ponzi scheme. So the double dip or repeat scam, you may know it as an advanced fee scheme. And what we see, when I got to the OC, people said, oh, watch for the double dip. I'm going, there's no way that the double dip works. There's no way. I've been in frauds for 10, 12 years. There's no way it works. Well, first case, it did work. So what is the double dip? You all get scammed. I've scammed you. And then a couple months later, Chris calls you. I hear that guy, Alistair, rip you off. Now, I'm getting together some of the investors. We're going to collect $500 off each person. We're going to go after Alistair and get some of your money back. And maybe we can get 50% back. And so for those of you that didn't tell your spouse that you're making this investment, if you get half the money back, are you only half in trouble? I'm not quite sure how it works in your relationships, but that's what you're aiming for, right? To take a bit of the hit off it. And once you start talking and thinking about it and identifying with you, maybe there's an ability to get some of the money back. You buy in. And guess what? Chris isn't there to help you. She's there to scam you. And quite often, Chris and I, we're competitors. We're both scammers, but we're also very realistic people. So either I give her the list of all my investors, or we switch lists, or she buys it off me. All I know is that I'm done with the list. I'm done with you. But she sees the opportunity to perhaps cash in on what I've done and make some money. That's the double dip. And 3 out of 10 people are defrauded more than once. And I've been to, Chris and I were at a meeting out in Durham, I believe it was about 4 or 5 years ago. And after we gave a talk, and the talk then was about binary options, which was a problem back then. And a lady came up to me and she goes, will you go talk to him? And she points at her husband. So I went over there and started chatting with him. And he was just getting ready to pull the trigger on like a $14,000 binary options deal. And they'd been scammed once before with some condo thing down in Mexico, timeshare thing. And so him and I had a great conversation. And at the end, they drove home together and they were happy with each other. So people, and this, we're talking very educated people here, retired people, professionals. And once you get involved in something and you identify with what that is, you want to believe that it is what it seems to be. So there's other investment scams out there. Forex, foreign currency is a big one, especially about 10 years ago. Offshore investing in things that you can't see, you can't really inspect, exempt securities. A lot of stuff going on out there about imitating financial brands. You'll get an email from an investment company, but it's really not that investment company. Fake accreditation, imposters, people saying they are a certain person and they're allowed to do a certain thing. And there's a lot of cryptocurrency stuff going on out there. And it's really, really important. I think we'll talk about it in a couple of minutes, but it's really important to know who you're talking about. So what are some of the warning signs of fraud? Do I have a deal for you? You can double your money in a short period of time, but we have to close the deal by noon. Now, we've all been the victims of high-pressure sales tactics. Maybe some of us have used them in our legitimate businesses to try to get people to sign on the dotted line. Fraudsters love to pile on the pressure. And all I can say is this, your friend is time. There's no deal that needs to be done by noon today. Take the time, create a distance between you and that person and do your homework, do your research, make sure, talk to whoever you need to talk to. There's no way you should jump that quickly. And we see it time and time again, especially if somebody has a big presence, they're really good at it. And I'm sure some of you were probably salespeople or business people. And when you need to get something done, you know how to apply that pressure to get things moving along. Now, who gets phone calls, texts, and emails from people that you don't know? Everybody? Who's on the no-call list? How's that working? Is that good? I have, on a regular basis, I'm getting so much, especially in texts right now and emails, about people offering me things, telling me there's stuff going on. Be very careful what you, links that you activate or things like that. The best thing, I'll tell you right now, every time I get an email from something I don't know, I just erase it. I just get rid of it right away. And one of the things that we talk to groups about, especially retired groups, because they're, I don't think they're home as much, but they certainly are more accessible by telephone, is, I tell people, I'm brutal, on the phone at the front door. I am the worst person. I just hang up on people. I shut the door on people, cause I don't want to go down this rabbit hole of something. And so what I ask people to do is if you get a cold call from somebody and you're not interested and, you know, you should really just hang up on the people, be polite or not be polite, whatever you need to do. And I'm actually going to give you all permission to be rude on the phone to people. There's times when people phone me up and tell me I need something or there's somebody and I'm going to get arrested again by the CRA or whatever it is. I just hang up the phone because I've heard the wiretaps of frauds as they're going. And these people are really good on the phone. And we're such nice people, us Canadians, aren't we? We're so polite. I give you permission to hang up on people and shut the door. And I'll tell this story. I've been telling it for years and it kind of just an example of what I do. And it really didn't work out that time. But one day, there was a knock at the door. I opened it up. I said, no, thank you. And I closed the door. And as I was closing the door, my mind was catching up to what I'd done with the door. And I realized it was the 10-year-old girl from around the corner and she was in her blue outfit with a box of cookies. So, that cost me, I think about $20. But they were the mint ones, which are my personal favorite. So it all worked out fine. But these are the things we have to do sometimes because once you start identifying with the people what they're talking about, you want to believe what it is. And as you start rolling down that hill, it's harder and harder to get out and to say no. Free incentives. We all know you don't get anything for free. So yeah, if you come and listen to this presentation on this investment opportunity, you get a free toaster or whatever it is. Or 10% off what the price is going to be very careful because that's just a leader to bring you in. Promises of a high return or guaranteed returns with little or no risk. We're in a low interest rate environment still. And we all know that to get a high level of return, there has to be a high level of risk in this environment. If somebody's telling you otherwise, they're not telling you the truth. And if Chris and I are talking about an opportunity and she gets me to sign, and then the next thing she says is, hey, do you have any friends or family that would be interested in this? You have to ask yourself the question. Is this about me or is this about some multi-level marketing thing that's going on? I don't know if I feel comfortable with this. An unregistered business or individual. Somewhere along the line, if somebody's selling you an investment, somebody's registered somehow. And it is so important to make sure that you're dealing with a registered individual. And that means that they have certain skills, they've got certain training, and it's just part of the process of ensuring that you're working with the right person. I've had a number of cases where the bad guys have told the investors to falsify their information, their financial information. And one of the cases I worked on was a foreign currency, a Forex scam. And part of that, it was a leveraged investment, so he had to borrow money. And I had this lady in, a very nice lady, and she I was troubled by her application and her investment contract. It was all kind of one flowing document. And it got to the point where her assets, and in her assets, it said she owned a house on a very nice street in Toronto. And she put the value of that house as $300,000. So, of course, I'm wondering, what part of the garage does that $300,000 represent, knowing the value, the property values on that street generally? And so when I put the question to her, and she said, listen, they told me to lie. They told me to tell them that I own the house rather than rent it, because that way I could borrow more money. That is actually a criminal offense. Section 362 of the Criminal Code, obtain credit by false pretenses. This crew was telling people to commit a criminal offense so that their victims could borrow more money so they could rip them off. This is not the crew you want to deal with. Now, I'd like a show of hands. Who's managed to ever rip off CRA? Anybody? Anybody? Actually, I think, Chris, I think there is two people that over the years that you and I worked together that have put up their hand. Of course, they weren't listening intently. And I just, I know, as I go through the presentation, I try to get people to lift up their hands a couple of times. One, to set up this joke, but also to get people continue to be interested in the presentation. There's quite a few. There are legitimate ways to deal with your tax situation. We all know what those are. But, and that's a theme that's very, very interested. Canadians are very interested in deferring taxes or somehow avoiding taxes the legitimate way. The bad guys know this, and quite often they'll enter a theme about tax avoidance into that. I'll tell you right now, I've worked with CRA. We all know who CRA is. There might be some people on this call that used to work for CRA. I don't know. CRA always gets their money one way or another. And it's just a matter, if it isn't the proper vehicle that you've invested in, it's a question of you're going to pay them back. It's just what the fine is going to be. So be very, very careful when the second thing out of somebody's mouth when they're talking to you is that there's a tax benefit to this. That's something you really need to research. And acting on an inside information or hot scoop, insider trading. If Chris comes up to me and goes, psst, Alistair, invest in ABC Limited. They're going public in a couple days. And you could make a lot of money. So first question, why would Chris be telling me that? Okay, Chris and I are friends, but why would some stranger come up to me and tell me this and then ask me to invest in it? And number two, insider trading is actually illegal in this province. And we have a special team in the enforcement branch that just deals with those types of cases. And there's been quite a number of high profile prosecutions in that area. So it's something to be careful about. Protecting yourself against investment fraud. Be skeptical. We've talked about texts and emails. Always start off, it's so important that we all know that if we need something, we know how to reach out and ask for it. We might have an investment advisor or somebody in a bank that we deal with for these types of things. Be very skeptical and stay away from unsolicited opportunities. Take the time to make an informed decision. Get a second opinion. Talk to your investment advisor. Talk to whoever you talk to about this, your accountant, whatever. Make sure you take the time and make a proper decision. Research the opportunity or the deal. There are no time limits on these things. And do a background check. And this is one of the most important things. We talk about it all the time, whether we're doing one of these talks or a telephone town hall or whatever we're doing, do a background check. And I know Chris is going to forward you the information. But there's a number there, 1-877-785-1555. That's our contact center. And if you are thinking about investing in a company or you're dealing with somebody, you want to know if they are registered to do this type of thing, you can call that number and they will do the check for you and tell you what they found. And what's good about this check is it's actually a nationwide check. It's the National Registration Database, so it's just not an Ontario thing. Or you can go on to checkbeforeyouinvest.ca, and there's a link there that will take you in and you can do the check yourself. It's a really easy thing to use. And it's so important that when you deal with somebody, when it comes to investment decisions, you know who they are and what they're allowed to do. And, if you're dealing with somebody and they're not registered, that's just a very dangerous situation. I'll tell you, I wasn't sure I was going to tell this story again. I've been telling it for a couple of years, but I don't recognize any of you. So I went into the bank to deal with my personal banker, who seems to be a different person every time I go in there. So I'm not sure about the title, but I went in there and it was for a mortgage product. And so I sat down, and so she got up and left the office to go get something off the printer. So I stood up and I started looking at all her plaques on the wall, and it showed all her registration status. So I'm looking at that. So she came in and she goes, "What are you doing?" "Well, I'm just checking out what you're allowed to do." She goes, "Oh," and she was a little put out, and then she put down my file and she opens it up and it says where I work, the Ontario Securities Commission. So it really changed the nature of the conversation. I got great service that day, by the way, but it is, you know, it is really important when you talk to somebody, and Chris is going to go into this, that you know who you're dealing with. So if you're dealing with a new person, or maybe, you know, it's somebody you're dealing with now, it's really good to understand that they're registered and for what. And for that, I think I'm going to hand it back to Chris. Oh, I mentioned that fraud is an underreported crime, and it really is. So if you have been scammed, or somebody's approached you, or you know that somebody is, or somebody's operating, or you've heard something, give us a call. I'll tell you right now, I've been in the enforcement world for 33, 34 years, and we can only do this job with you. And so we would like people to let us know what's going on. So our contact number is there. There's an email, inquiries@osc.gov.on.ca. Contact your local police, the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. I know Chris is going to send all this information. It's so important that we hear from you. We cooperate with the police, with the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. We all work together very, very well. For a period of time, it was my job to facilitate these things and to make sure we were all connected. And we've always had a good relationship with everybody involved in kind of the fraud investigation area. So please, if you are the victim, even if it happened and your money's gone, we still need to hear from you, because this is how we solve things. And by making that call, you could help protect somebody else. Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's just some random stranger from ending up in a world of hurt. So please, if you know something that's going on, give us a call. Let us know. And maybe we can do something to stop somebody from falling into a very bad situation. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Alistair. That was great. So as Alistair mentioned, you know, he's covered the fraud prevention part of the presentation. So I'm now going to spend some time talking to you about that client advisor relationship, what questions to ask, and where to get additional information. So let's just start. So, you know, if you have a financial representative, that person got to know you, your financial situation, your goals, your time frame, and they made investment recommendations. And this is where I always say registration is really important, because if this person is making investment recommendations, you want to be sure that this person has the qualifications to make those recommendations, understand how the products work, you know, can explain it to you so that you know what it is that you are investing in. Care about your investments. You know, people are making investment recommendations for you. Ask questions. Ask questions like, how does this investment work? How risky is it? How will it help me meet my goals? What if I need my money back? You know, there are so many different types of products out there that they're all structured in different ways. And some products you may need to hold for a period of time before you can sell it without any penalties, or maybe there are tax implications and things like that. So it's really important to ask, what if I need my money back? Understand your risk tolerance. And what do I mean by that? We know the riskier the investment, the likelihood you could make higher returns. But remember, the riskier the investment, the likelihood of higher returns, which means you could also lose everything because that investment is riskier. So what's your financial ability to take on higher risk investments? And also internally, how do you process risk? Are you able to sleep at night if you invest in something that's highly volatile? You know, you're investing for your financial well-being. And if you invest in something that's going to give you sleepless nights, maybe it's not the kind of investment that you should be looking at. And always, always review all your confirmation slips, statements, those reports that you get. You know, and I say this applies not only to your investments, to anything related to your finances. And why is it important to review them? And you want to review them as soon as you get them. Because, you know, if you review it and there's a problem, you can contact the organization, the person you're working with, to get that resolved right away. If you get these statements, these, you know, reports, and you put it aside, when you have time and you go to review them, you might have forgotten, you know, what you've agreed to do, what conversation you had with your advisor. You know, you might have, even if it was your credit card, you might have forgotten what purchases you made. It just takes that much longer to get any problems resolved. And always maintain regular communication with your advisor. We did a report, we did a research study, which found that, you know, Canadians were more anxious about their health and certainly finances during the COVID-19 period. And people were very stressed about their investments. And about a quarter of the people that were very stressed about their investments never reached out to their advisor. And I think to myself, if you are working with someone who's helping you manage your money and you're concerned, reach out to them, communicate with them. It's in your best interest to keep your advisor informed of what's happening in your life. You know, we heard that people during this pandemic, many people were moving. So let's say it's something you want to do 2 years from now. You need to let them know so that they can ensure that your portfolio is in that, you know, is in that position so that when you are ready to move, you can do so. Or maybe you have a new grandchild. Well, if you have a new grandchild, maybe you want to leave a little legacy to help them, you know, with their education. So these are some of the things, you know, that you can share with that advisor to ensure that your investments, that portfolio that you have is there to help you meet your needs. And the last thing I'm going to talk about is adding a trusted contact person. So new rules came out, and this will go into effect at the end of the year, where advisors will now be asking their clients to add a trusted contact person to their file. And this is like an emergency contact because, you know, as we age, we are faced with many challenges, and some of it could be financial exploitation or diminished mental capacity. So adding a trusted contact person in your file is just a resource for that advisor to reach out if they suspect that there's an issue and they can reach out to this person just for some additional information. So something to think about and that your advisor will be reaching out to ask you to think about in the next few months. Now you are working with someone. How do you know they're doing a good job for you? Well, you know, one of the ways to look at is how's your portfolio doing? And how does it compare to appropriate benchmarks? And what do I mean by that? If you invest in bonds, how has your bond portfolio compared to a bond index? Do they follow a similar trajectory? I mentioned, you know, ensuring that you review these reports and statements that you get. Well, you get two annual statements related to your account, one on how your investments have performed and the other related to fees and charges related to service. Review those statements, you know, ensure that you understand what you're looking at and you're happy. And then the other thing is, you know, is your advisor available? Are they providing you with advice? You know, are they explaining things to you? And, you know, I had someone say to me about a year ago, I have a wonderful advisor. And I said, well, that's great. I'm glad you're happy with this person. But, and here's the but, you know, every time she asked the advisor to explain something, the advisor would explain it. Unfortunately, she did not understand what the advisor was explaining to her. So there's a bit of an issue there, lack of communication. Communicate with your advisor. And then you have to decide if you're happy with that relationship. Now, how do you know if there's a problem? Well, maybe you never hear from your advisor. You know, maybe they're making investment recommendations that don't seem to match your goals, you know. Or you're checking your statement and you're seeing a lot of trades going on or things that you don't remember agreeing to do. You know, these may all be signs that there's a problem. So what do you do? talk to your advisor and their manager. And maybe that's all you need to do is have a discussion. You have this discussion and then guess what? Problem solved. What happens if that problem isn't resolved? Put it in writing. Firms will have to investigate and get back to you. They investigate, they get back to you, problem solved. What happens if you're still not happy? I have a few options. You can contact the Ombudsman for Banking Services and Investments. It's a third-party organization that will provide a free and independent review of your case. Or maybe you think you might need legal advice. You can contact the Investor Protection Clinic. And we have two Investor Protection Clinics in Ontario. We have one that's run out of Osgoode Hall Law School, and we also have one that's run out of U of T. All else fails, you're not sure who to contact, what to do, you can always call the OSC Contact Center, a great team of people, and they will be more than happy to walk you through this process. Now, we've given you a lot of information, but maybe you need more information. Where else can you go? You can go to our website, getsmarteraboutmoney.ca. That's our website. So we're a regulator. We're not selling you anything. We're just giving you good information so that you can make better decisions for yourself. A couple tools that I want to highlight, and this came about during COVID-19. One of our research studies found that about a third of Canadians did not have an emergency fund. We have an emergency fund calculator. So that's a tool that's on our website. If it's something you don't have, you might want to, you know, calculate how much you might want to save to set aside for an emergency. Another thing we've noticed is that during this pandemic, we were getting a lot of visits to the wills and estate planning section on our site. And one of the tools that we have is a personal information inventory form. So you've got all your documentation in order. The next step is to take this personal information inventory form. And on that form, you would record, you know, what are all those personal documents? Where are they located? You know, who are all those professionals you deal with? The medical professionals, financial professionals. You know, what are all those social media accounts that you have? And, you know, what are those passwords? I have two cell phones. If someone were to needed to access my contact information of my phone and they don't have my password, they're not able to get it. So that's what this form is. It's something that you can put all that information on, store it in a safe place, and share that location with someone you trust to say, hey, you know, if you needed information and I wasn't able to give it to you, you can go get this form in X location. So a couple tools that we have on our website that can help you. Another thing we're noticing is that there's been a lot of interest in crypto assets. Crypto assets, you know, cryptocurrency being one of them. You know, you may be more familiar with bitcoins. That's one of those cryptocurrencies. They're digital currencies. They're not legal tender. They're not backed by a Canadian central bank. Right now, this field is really open. There are a lot of people coming in with new type of cryptocurrencies, new type of trading platforms. Just be very wary because, you know what, a lot of these things may not be regulated. So you want to know what it is you're getting into. So if this is something you're interested in, please go on our website and check out the crypto asset section so you can learn more about it. And then we have more information on, you know, financial elder abuse, getting advice, all kinds of tools to help you. I want to highlight this particular page of our site. It's called Investing Questions. Sometimes people will send us an email and ask us a question. And of course, we will respond. If you send us an email and you're asking that question, likely someone else is interested in that same question and the answer to that question. So what we do is we post those questions and answers on this particular page of our website. So it's another resource for you. And then lastly, we have other ways that you can keep connected and get updated. We have an e-newsletter, Investor News, and you can sign up for it through Our website gets smarteraboutmoney.ca. We also have a Twitter feed, a Facebook page, and a YouTube channel. So lots of places that you can get information. And that said, I'm now going to stop sharing our screen and open it up for questions.